Hey folks, Heather Cox Richardson and Joanne Freeman here. Thank you for being members of the Cafe Insider community.
This is Backstage, a special segment of the Now and Then podcast exclusively for you. We hope you enjoy it. So Heather, one of the interesting things about the conversation we had in preparing for today's episode was at one point it shifted away from the broader topic that we were discussing, and you and I began talking about moments when, as women, we've had some interesting responses to some of our public assertions.
Well, especially since we both write about politics. So the comments that we get are always politically laden. And I was saying to Joanne that one of the things that always amuses me, but also is very much a part of this dynamic, is that frequently, and I'm not going to put a number on it, but I'm going to say at least half and probably three quarters of the hate mail I get talks about how ugly I am and how, you know, I look like a man and all kinds of like ways to try and denigrate my physical appearance, which, first of all, amuses me to no end, because why I would want to be attractive to people writing me hate
mail, right?
It's like, it doesn't occur to me. But there is something in that, that they think that there's nothing more profound that they could say to hurt me than that I'm ugly.
And think of the logic of that, right? Because the logic of that is, internally, wait a minute, she's really smart. Like, she's really public and she's saying things that she's really smart. Well, she's ugly. It's, you know, the beginning of that weird statement is, I'm totally threatened by what's going on here. So I'm going to find the thing that I think is worst of all to say. And that's the thing I'll make up and then throw in her direction. Because of course, she'll be horrified.
Because women belong pretty and married, or if they're out in public, they are by definition neither of those things, and they need to be insulted and they're ugly.
Now, in my case, a lot of the comments that I get, sort of hate comments or critical comments, somehow or other end up focusing on marriage. Why, I couldn't tell you, but I will get things along the lines of, you know, no wonder you're not married, or no one's ever going to want you if you keep acting like that, or sort of that's the kind of take that I get in these comments, which, first of all, what that means is that this person has looked up to see if I'm married, right? Because otherwise, why is that? So this person already is in some weird zone. I don't know what zone they're in. But the fact that, again, what they're thinking is, uh-oh, like, she's assertive and loud and she sounds smart and I don't like that. So you know what? Men aren't going to like you. No man is going to like you if you keep acting like that. That's essentially what those kinds of statements are saying.
Well, and it's worth mentioning, I think, we're the same age, born the same year, that I remember growing up in the 1960s and the 1970s, that there were lots of women present and active in the public sphere who were participating on an equal level with men. They weren't necessarily there because of their looks. And that changes really dramatically in the 1980s. And the 1990s, when we get the rise of the Fox News Channel and the idea of the glass desks, so you can look at the legs of the women, and the dynamic there where you have young, beautiful women and older, dominant men like Bill O'Reilly, for example, that again is your visual portrayal of dominance politics in a place that gets beamed into all kinds of homes. And it's really surprising to me to look now, not now necessarily so much, but in the period in the 1990s, for example, or the 1900s, how many fewer active, outspoken women were in journalism, in Congress, in all the places that they were when we were kids, that I looked at my own daughter and thought, you know, who are your role models? I remember listening to Barbara Jordan and being like, wow. And then, you know, it's not that those women weren't there, but they were much more differently wrapped or differently packaged than they were when we were kids, before the rise of this dominance politics language.
And the promotion of it, the visible promotion of it, right? Because there were women there very much in that category, but I think if you weren't looking for them as kids, we wouldn't necessarily have had them paraded in front of us in any way so that we would have had that as a kind of model. But it's interesting. I guess I hadn't thought about the glass desk. You're absolutely right that that's what that's about.
You know where else you can see what we're talking about with the dominance and the changing roles of women and of people of color, people who are not a part of the dominant male critique of society or the dominant male control of society, is if you think about the original Star Wars, 1977, A New Hope, and the portrayal of Princess Leia, who is, of course, I don't know, what is she, the queen of the universe? I know I'm going to get a million letters about how she's not. But, you know, she's the powerful
woman.
She's a queen, right?
Whoever she is, she's important, the important person.
And she is independent. She, at one point, there's a scene where Harrison Ford as Han Solo comes in and she's trying to fix something on the Millennium Falcon, I think it is. And she's got a big wrench and he tries to help her and she's like, get out of my face, you know? And it's a really interesting contrast between her and then Elizabeth Swann in the Pirates of the Caribbean, the third one where she really is the queen of the pirates or whatever, the empress of the pirates or whatever the grand poobah is of the pirate thing. And her goal is not to run the universe as a politician and take her an equal stand. Her goal in directing the whole pirate fleet is to get married.
Now, I do, before I respond to that, I do want to point out we're having a popular culture Heather moment right here, which I just have to like point my finger at it. That was a double whammy popular culture moment from Heather. But I don't think I know that particular Pirates of the Caribbean movie, but that right there is a slap in your face for telling you precisely what values are being celebrated or given to women.
Well, let me try this then. I have seen a few movies, not many, but the other place you really see it is in popular music. Think about the 1970s,
had
just phenomenal voices like Linda Ronstadt, who showed up. I mean, she was a beautiful woman, but she showed up in jeans and a t-shirt without makeup or anything else. And the idea of a woman becoming a popular icon in the late 1980s. So can you imagine Linda Ronstadt going up? I mean, that's 10 years before 1984 and Madonna's Material Girl. I mean, they're just an eon apart.
My memory of the 80s on a sort of superficial level is just glossy and big, big clothes, big shoulders, big hair, but not like working girl. Right. I think of Working Girl and this movie where there's this ambitious woman and she's a secretary and she wants to not just be a secretary, but there's still a gratuitous scene in there where she's vacuuming in lingerie. Right. So it's like you might be able to say, oh, like I'm ambitious, too. But it's not, that really is not sending that message at all. The 80s is all about looking sort of big and glossy, but in a hyper sexualized kind of a way. Right. I mean, think of Dallas or what's the other show based on Dallas, where they're all Texans in big clothes and women in gowns with big hair. The 80s is a decade of excess, but it's also a decade of playing right into what we were talking about in this episode, sort of gender dynamics writ large. I still have in my closet some of these suits and things that I was wearing in the 80s with the biggest shoulders in the universe.
Shoulder pads.
Holy smoke. Yeah. Just in and of themselves. And of course, part of what that is doing, there was part of the style, I guess, of women in the working world at that time was kind of dressing like men. Isn't that the era of the like weird little bow tie and the suits that look like men? And yeah, that you're just going to look like them and then you'll fit right in and then you can compete.
I just have to throw out here, Joan Cusack. I've seen that movie too.
Hey, okay. I'm
just, she's actually one of my favorite actresses. I guess there was a brief moment there between graduate school and children that I actually did get to participate in popular culture.
I'm storing this away into my memory so that I can recall.
But it was a very brief period. So if it fell in that short window in there, I guess I saw some stuff in the 1980s. It is interesting that the degree to which we have internalized, I think, as a society, this unequal dynamic so that you can have a Chuck Schumer moment where somebody said the pearl clutching of how dare he, you know.
If I could point
affront
to that term, please, pearl clutching.
Yes, but that has a double meaning. Well,
right, that's what I mean.
But that people could argue that the aggressor in that circumstance was Chuck Schumer, who was tying himself in knots to do stuff by the book while the Republicans were blowing everything up. was just, to me, it was just such a crystal clear moment of the extremes to which this rhetoric has taken us. And it will be interesting to see the degree to which the next generation unravels this and recognizes that this is not politics as normal in America. It was the politics of the 1850s. It's the politics of the present. But that we've had an awful lot of generations that didn't have this weird dominance rhetoric in their politics.
But related to that, too, in the current moment, we have the real rise of women in politics, in Congress, the voices of women. We also have that moment happening now, too. So it is a really interesting question down the road when you think about the public sphere, when you think about women, when you think about politics, what are the sort of younger people today who are just sort of growing up in the morass of this? What will their models be? You know, and I always have a mixed feeling when we think about questions like that, because I do a lot of public work, and there are almost every time I do some kind of big public event, there are like 8, 9, 10-year-old girls who will come up and are very, very excited that I write about history and I stand up on the stage and I'm a woman. Like, really excited. The best sort of example of that was a girl who came up with a drawing that she'd made of me. And it was me at a podium speaking, and I was holding a copy of my book, and the bubble coming out of my mouth said, "She wrote this." And I just, some part of me was moved by that, and some part of me is sad at that, that in this day and time where we are now, that there is still, that still seems surprising to a younger generation of people, that that still kind of strikes them and really leaves big question marks about where we'll be. I hope that given people calling out some of the behavior that we were talking about in this episode today, given that women are ever more prominent and people of all colors, you know, that it's not just white men in the public sphere now, and when there are only white men present, people will call that out as well, then maybe the next generation, there'll really be a different dynamic. I sure hope so.
I don't think it's accidental that we are calling attention to this, as you started out by saying, as women, but also that so many women and people of color have stepped up to the plate during the Trump administration, beginning with the day after his inauguration with the March on Washington and all over the country and all over the world, to say, we see what you're doing and we're not going to stand for it and we're going to insist on pushing back. And I think that's one of the reasons we're seeing such hysteria at the amongst those who feel like they're going to be losing power. And what's interesting is it's not that their power is being taken from them.
Right.
What people are asking for is a level playing field.
Correct.
And they have lived for so long with this skewed
politics. It's the assumption of entitlement. It's the fact that what they assume is theirs actually can be shared among others. It isn't power being taken away. It is the desire, as you just put it, I think that's the best way of putting it. It is a desire for a level playing field, and not the assumption that certain people belong at the top by definition and can never be questioned.
Which is what theoretically our system is all about. But again, it's been so skewed with this idea that there's a sense that those who are not on top should continue to apologize when what they're simply asking for is a fair shake.
Which is a real reminder of something that we didn't talk about per se in the episode, but that's important to note, which is we're talking about politics. We're political historians. We're talking about politics. We're talking about democracy and level playing fields, but democracy isn't just political. We're also talking about the culture. We're talking about the nation. We're talking about how people understand what being an American is and sort of what that means and how the nation, sort of what its grounding is. So when we're talking about the sorts of things we talked about today, and when we're talking about where we are now and pondering where we're going to go in future, it isn't just a matter of bullying and dominance and unfairness. It's a real question of culturally, politically, socially, what kind of a nation are we going to be? Thank you for joining us backstage.
Be sure to write to us with your thoughts and questions at letters@cafe.com. See you next time.